Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond here for the next hour on KLBB Club 1220. With me is Tom Hsu working the board and the computer and tweeting probably.
Hello, sir. I'm afraid I cannot tweet.
Getting your riot gear ready for tonight, right?
not so much.
So the word is no rioting tonight, right?
No rioting? What am I going to riot about?
There's this whole hockey match going on tonight. The local sports team's going to go out and play in Philadelphia and they might win, and then we go out and, I don't know, wreck stuff?
I will admit that's what I do normally, so I mean, it's not a special occasion.
Yeah, well,
I'm just a hooligan.
Sometimes you wonder, enough people watch hockey to have a riot about it, but you get enough kids with enough spirits, as we've called it, and I guess anything's fair game.
Liquid courage. You know, it's been a while since I remember reading about any kind of giant riot after a sporting event here in the Twin Cities.
Yeah, you know, I recall they had won the first championship in about 2002, well, the one that I recall, and then they were going to take action to make sure it didn't happen again. The next year they won, and it happened even worse than the first time. So I think that with the semi-final this last week, and they only had 12 arrests, they're you look at the picture in the paper, and there's people, and there's the police are in riot gear and masks, looking Ooh. Like stormtroopers, ready to take on.
College kids, drunk middle-aged folks.
Yeah, well, you know, you don't want people's stuff to get wrecked, and you don't want windows broken. So let's be safe out there tonight for everyone that's going to go out there and celebrate peacefully. We have a local legend today. Barry Zavan's going to be on with us today. He's going to talk a little bit about Mickey Rooney with us. Mickey Rooney, who passed away unfortunately this last week at age 93, and I want to talk a little bit about Mickey Rooney before for the segment here. Mickey Rooney, this is from USA Today, and this was published on Monday, so it's been since we've been together here. Mickey Rooney was the original Hardy Boy. His 200-plus film credits notwithstanding, the spry, spirited Rooney will be best remembered for playing the impetus title character in MGM's beloved Andy Hardy movies. Rooney, 93, who died Sunday surrounded by family at his North Hollywood home, leaves behind a colorful Hollywood legacy that spanned 80 years and a couple of hundred films, including Boys Town and The Black Stallion. He won two honorary Oscars, the first in 1938 and the second in 1982. It's kind of a wide span of Oscar wins there. In January 2005, Rooney made headlines for an unlikely reason when Fox rejected the Super Bowl Cold Remedy commercial featuring Rooney's bare bottom for being inappropriate. I might have rejected that also. Rooney certainly knew how to put on a show, but of all the characters that Rooney inhabited, from Puck in 1935 film production of A Midsummer Night's Dream to his Oscar-nominated turn as a prematurely mature teen in 1943's The Human Comedy, not one could compete with or begin to overshadow Rooney himself. Laurence Olivier called Rooney the greatest actor of them all. That's pretty
impressive.
Yet he was the unluckiest of stars. At 5'3", Rooney was short with pointy elfin features. This is really what they wrote here, elfin features, and a spirited in-your-face energy more suited to selling cars than starring in films. Yet during the Depression, when jobs were scarce and the national mood grim, audiences loved his Jolie de vivre.
Joie de vivre.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm here for you.
Thank you. And his down-home appeal. Born Joe Yule Jr. in a Brooklyn, New York rooming house on September 23, 1920, Rooney made his first stage appearance at 17 months as part of his comic and father and mother's vaudeville performances. Performing, Rooney told Backstage, was in my blood, it's who I am. He switched to the silver screen at age 6, playing the title character Mickey McGuire in 78 film shorts based on the old Toonerville trolley cartoons from 1927 until 1933. In 1932, he changed his monkier to the catchier Mickey Rooney, and 5 years later landed the role that would define him for the rest of his career, the feisty teen about town Andy Hardy, with a cheeky grin, irresistible boy-next-door charm, and plenty of romantic mishaps. The 15-part movie serials were such a smash from 1939 to 1941, Rooney became the Tom Cruise of his time, the number one box office draw in the country. I think Tom Cruise would appreciate that, putting Mickey Rooney's picture next to his as the number one box office draws.
You know what? I'm looking at IMDb here for Mickey Rooney, and he has over 338 credits.
Just from last year, right?
You know, it's actually ridiculous how many things he has been in. He's been in at least four or five things every single year. Every single year. The man does not stop working.
I think I saw him in some commercials for some insurance at one point, too. But
he was even in the most recent Muppets movie. That, I think, is the last time that I saw him in a film.
We'll get to that in a second here. But like any good mutual fund, Rooney diversified, playing a problem child in Boys Town opposite Spencer Tracy in 1938 and co-starring in 1939 musical Babes in Arms with longtime collaborator and pal Judy Garland, with whom he starred in 10 films. The two enjoyed a close friendship off-screen, and it was no coincidence that of all his Hollywood compatriots, Rooney bonded most with Garland, a troubled star who, like him, matured in front of the cameras and struggled to find her footing as an adult. At the peak of his fame, Rooney met President Roosevelt in the White House and auto magnate Henry Ford in Dearborn, Michigan. And soon his personal life became every bit as gaudy as his film roles, starting it with 1942, his marriage to sultry actress Ava Gardner, the first of his eight wives.
He had eight
wives. His popularity starting, his star ever rising, Rooney's success seemed unstoppable until 1944 when he served in World War II, joining the Entertainment Brigade, dubbed the Jeep Theater, and traveling 150,000 miles to entertain more than 2 million overseas troops. But when the war was over in 1945, Rooney returned to Hollywood, where he was suddenly something of an outsider. MGM, the studio that had turned Rooney into a megastar, dropped him. And he found there was little industry wiggle room for a quirky, unconventionally appealing actor who wasn't a kid anymore, but lacked the stature of a mature leading man. Like Macaulay Culkin in the 1990s, Rooney had trouble making the transformation from kid star to adult star. But Rooney, ever the realist, knew his time at the top would be short-lived. He quotes, "I tell you, there are 150 million kids waiting to fill the reservoir," he told USA Today in 1994. "I say bravo to the youngsters. I had my day at bat." So the impish, scampy star reinvented himself as a character actor with solid supporting turns in 1954's The Bridge at Tokyo Re and the 1956 The Bold and the Brave. But by the 1960s, Rooney told the London Times in 1988, "The work was very sparse indeed. There was just no demand for me." Well, not quite. Rooney kept on acting, playing a horse trainer in 1979's The Black Stallion, saw that, and returning to the stage and dazzling audiences in the 1979 Broadway spectacle Sugar Babies, which earned him a Tony nomination. "Rooney is the heart and soul on the body of Enterprise," raved Newsweek. Quote from Rooney, "I was a very famous has-been until the show," he told the Associated Press in 1979. "Now it's almost like the resurrection of a career. Someone who's saying he didn't cop out on us, he's still there." Indeed, he was there all along, plugging away, but his long list of screen credits aside, Rooney will also be remembered for his mirroring ways. "Just call Rooney, who said, I do, eight times, the male Elizabeth Taylor." "I was selective," Rooney told people in 1993. "I was looking for a woman who knew how to be a woman, who knew how a man needs to be treated." He looked long and hard, trying his luck with, among others, model Elaine Macon, California beauty Barbara Ann Thomason, and secretary Carolyn Hockett before ending up with country singer-songwriter Jan Chamberlain in 1978. "I guess I practiced a lot," Rooney told New York Daily News in 2004, "but you got to remember, this is one that counts." And to him, all those trips to the altar weren't too big a deal. "Isn't it a funny thing that Cary Grant, who was a dear friend of mine, married five times, but they don't say anything about that?" Rooney mused to People in 1991. "It's like my divorces were dastardly deeds. I was supposed to marry my high school sweetheart and go off to the sunset with a box of detergent." You might have spotted him as a speechless, fugly flume in 1998 smash Babe, Pig in the City. I love USA Today's descriptive words
fugly
here.
Fugly flume?
Or heard him in a Junkyard Dog. Heard him as Junkyard Dog in 2001's Lady and the Tramp 2 Scamp's Adventure. I missed that one. But despite his work ethic, Rooney filed for bankruptcy in 1996 with more than $1 million in debt. Rooney spent his twilight years with Jan in a posh Los Angeles home filled with family pictures. He wrote, he painted, and he remained true to his religion after joining the Church of Religious Science in the 1960s. "We all leave the church sometime," he told the AP in 1979. "All of a sudden, your life is empty. I went back because I realized God had never left me. I left him." And he kept writing and performing, going on the road with his wife in the Biological Review, "Let's Put on a Show," touching, intimate traveling tour down memory lane. "I don't retire, I inspire," Rooney told the Palm Beach Post in 2001. "Mickey Rooney is not great. Mickey Rooney was fortunate to have been in an infinite part of motion pictures and show business." And Tom, I got an audio clip that you're going to like here. This is one of my favorite Mickey Rooney roles.
I think
right
I know exactly what it is.
So I'm going to go ahead and play this, and we're going to have a little laugh here.
No!
All right, I tried. Fortunately, we have a perfectly good Fallout Boy right here. Jiminy Jellickers! Jiminy Jellickers! Jiminy Jellickers!
And to those who actually have lives and don't watch TV all day, that is Mickey Rooney trying to get a role in a fictional movie in The Simpsons. That was one of my favorite guest spots that Mickey Rooney did.
I was going to say that I know I've seen him in things before that episode of The Simpsons, but that is the one that really just put into my mind who Mickey Rooney is and how much fun that man can be.
Well, let me give you some homework here, Tom. I think there's two movies I want you to watch.
Sure.
You need to go watch Captain's Courageous. It's a great movie. Mickey Rooney's in that. Spencer Tracy's in that. One of my favorite movies of all time.
Spencer Tracy is the man. Okay.
He is the man, yep. And then the second one, this is a much later one. It's called Bill. And
just Bill.
It's called Bill. And Mickey Rooney plays it takes place in Minneapolis. And Mickey Rooney played Bill Sachter. He was a mentally handicapped man. He was institutionalized for his whole life. He was out in the world, and it's very, very deep, very emotional movie, and actually one of the roles that Mickey Rooney had most beloved, enjoyed saying. I saw an interview with him saying this one time. So there's your homework. I want you to watch those two movies or watch them at some point.
I can make that happen.
And then we'll get your review on those. Let's take a break because we have, I think our guest actually just walked in the door here. The curtain just came up and he walked in. So we'll take a break here and we'll come back with Barry Zavan. He might have a Mickey Rooney story or two, and we'll be doing that here in Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities. Tom Osmond here with our very special guest, the David Brunner of Flashback Twin Cities, Barry Zavan.
Heaven forbid David just died. I'm still alive.
Yeah, but you have like 200 more appearances, you know, if you have to do one of my shows. Then we can go that next step.
That would be lovely. That would be lovely.
So, Barry, what's going on? Hey, we were talking this week, and you had a Mickey Rooney story that you wanted to talk about.
More than one.
What's the best one you can
tell? Well, I would like to give the entire litany, which will take us up to 4 o'clock. But I'll make it fast. I'll talk like a chipmunk. It actually started with Mickey and me with his dad, Joe Ewell, in 1947. And I wrote about this in my little community blog, the Star Tribune, this past week. Anyway, in 1947, my mom and I were on vacation in New York before we moved there. And we were at the Edison Hotel, and my mom had been, as has been told on this program a few times, my family was into show business very deeply from the beginning. And so we were walking through the lobby of the Edison, and my mom said, "Oh, my gosh, there's Mickey Rooney's father, Joe Ewell." And she, of course, had known of Joe and seen him, et cetera. Little sidebar here, one of the people in the orchestra at the Edison Hotel, the house band, the Henry Jerome Band, was a guy named Alan Greenspan, who was the saxophonist in those days and later became not Treasury Secretary, but there was another appellation for him. Regardless, he...
The Federal Reserve, he was the...
Exact, chairman of the Federal Reserve.
I didn't realize he was a performer before he did that.
Okay. Yeah, he was a saxophonist professional.
And now he's married to...
Now he's married to Andrea Mitchell.
Andrea Mitchell, right.
Yeah. So anyway, went up to Mr. Ewell, and my mom had reminded him that he had worked with some of people in our family in music, and he took a shine to me, and he also said Mickey was just then married to Martha Vickers. And he said, "This is going to be the one. She's going to be it. That's it." That was wife number 3 of 8. But anyway, I remember he was very elf-like. You mentioned in that article in USA
Elfin
Today.
Elfin was the term.
Yes, elfin. I was going to refer to that. But elfin, he got that from his dad, Mickey did, because Mickey played Finian in Finian's Rainbow and, of course, very elfin-like himself. So anyway, we kept in touch, and now we fast forward to 1949 in August, late August, and Joe is touring with Finian's Rainbow. Other people in that cast were Harry Stockwell, Dean Stockwell's father, and David Wayne, and several others. Anyway, my mom called Mr. Ewell the theater in Pittsburgh, the legitimate theater, was called the Nixon Theater. And it was not a crook. And so anyway,
well,
sorry.
Let's make it perfectly clear. It's not a crook.
Okay. Anyway, yeah, drum roll. Anyway, rim shot, I guess. Anyway, so she called Mr. Ewell, and he said, bring Barry down to the theater because I think he'd be great to tour with us as one of the kids who danced around the wishing well in Finnegan's Rainbow.
Sure.
So, by golly, I did the play in Pittsburgh with him and in Cleveland. And that was all I could do because I was ready to start grade school, my last year of grade school then. So, anyway, that's how we got to meet Mr. Ewell. But, now we fast forward to us moving to New York City to start my bigger career, bigger part of my career. And who do we run into all the time? Mickey Rooney. Because my grandfather was one of Milton Berle's agents, and so when Milton has his show, the Texaco Star Theater, and some of the other shows that he did in the 50s, Mickey was a guest frequently. So I got to know Mickey.
How old was he in this time of his life then when you were in New York?
Well, he was older than I was.
Right.
I can't tell you. He was probably in his 30s, 20s, and 30s.
So he's well past the child star. He was really one of the child stars that...
No, he was well past that. But but Mickey did so much. And then the one thing we actually did together was the Perry Como Show. He was a guest on the Como Show when I was one of the Ray Charles singers for 2 years. And I'll never forget, during one of the rehearsals, my mom was backstage. Mickey went up and planted a giant kiss on her lips, and afterward she told me, I really didn't like that. I said, Mom, you know, let it be.
Yeah.
Of course, I told you once, Duke Ellington kissed me on the lips once, too, in my office in Las Vegas.
That'll happen sometimes.
I never washed my lips after that. Anyway, go ahead.
You need to stand more. I think you need to get farther away from me here. I got a couple words here now. Let's moniker. I said monkier because I think of, you know, Mickey Rooney as a monkey, so I use the term monkier, and I apologize to the listening audience. Barry likes to keep me perfect, so it's moniker.
Absolutely. I'm sorry. I'm a word freak.
You know what, though? Last time we got together over at Newsapalooza, you mentioned the root and route difference.
Yes.
And I have thought of that every single time.
Look,
I play
that,
Route 66. It's our theme song on our weekly show.
That's right.
Weekday show. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And I was happy during Newsapalooza that when I said that and some other corrections, the audience applauded.
That's right.
They did,
And it's kind of nice to know there are some people out there who really care about the English language.
We still do. We kind of make it as we go along sometimes, but occasionally we have to go back to the basics and correct punctuation and correct spelling. And it's going to be all acronyms pretty soon, you know, LOL and YOLO. But
I'm glad to not hear YOLO.
My favorite story when you talk about New York is always the days of Mr. Peepers with Wally Cox.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about that. A lot of our audience knows that sitcom, but refresh our memory.
Okay. Luckily for me, I had an agent who represented a kid who was in school with me. His name was David Winters. David eventually was in West Side Story, both the film and the Broadway production. But David was on Peepers, and he said Barry should be part of one of the students. So thanks to David, God bless him. I did well over 20 episodes of 52 episodes. Because each episode never, a lot of them didn't have the kids on, but anyway, played one of the students, and it was interesting because the night before, and it always kind of put me in awe of this in later years, the night before your show of shows with Sid Caesar, Imogene Coca, Carl Reiner, Howie Morris, and Mel Brooks, and also Woody Allen were writers then for your show of shows, was performed on the very same stage the night before we did Peepers on that stage. And I used to have to come in. We were living at the time in Rego Park, Queens, so I had to take the E train in to Rockefeller Center. We did it in a theater called the RKO Center Theater, and it was the best television theater in those days. But I would get off the subway at 7 o'clock in the morning because rehearsals started at 7:30, and we were live. And that's when Tony Randall became kind of my mentor for the rest of my life. But anyway, it always bemused me to see when I walked into the theater, the stagehands breaking the sets down from the night before for your show of shows and putting up, of course, our sets. And as I say, it was live. And Wally, there was one particularly good story, I think, which almost got us all fired.
I do want to hear this one.
Okay. Well, it's not that juicy, but it illustrates why live television was so incredibly focused, laser-focused, because you could not make a mistake. You were on time. You were on national television live. And with the lines, you can forget your lines, whatever. Anyway, this one particular episode, which, by the way, you can see on YouTube or Amazon or one of those things that's running our stuff now, was about the spider crab. And Wally, in his inimitable voice, said, now you children should know the spider crab is such and such. And so he goes into this thing. Well, he was so damn funny. Excuse my French. That is a word. It's in the Bible. Anyway.
this show, it's okay.
Anyway,
we break the rules.
We are cable, aren't we? Anyway, so he was so, pardon me, it was so funny, we all started trying to compress our laughter. And God bless Wally. He's looking at us all going like this. and he was a brilliant actor anyway.
Well, then Harvey Korman and Carol Burnett ripped off your act then, because they did that for 10 years.
Right, yeah. So anyway, after the show, he said, now, you children, if you ever do that again, you're off the show. Just like that. And we said, oh, I'm sorry, Wally, you know, and so forth and so on. We were just devastated. But he was so funny. And, of course, we should have kept in character, and we didn't. And, you know, it's...
What was the payback in those days? What did a student and Mr. Peepers make per episode? 45,000?
Easily, yeah. Right. 45,000 kopecks.
Right.
No, it was the...
Rubles.
Yeah, the union scale then was $85 per show.
That's pretty good for
1952-53. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, Shirley Jones, who you know I know very, very well, and Lord willing, we're going to get her on your show here with phone fairly soon, next month. But Shirley, in her book, and I didn't know this, guess how much she got paid a week for both Oklahoma and Carousel, these blockbuster films?
I don't know.
$500 a week.
Huh.
Can you imagine? So $2,000 a month for these iconic films. And it just,
Can you say? And back to Mr. Peepers real quick. Now, there are some episodes that do exist. These are all kinescope because they
– Kinescope.
Kinescope. There was live TV, so they did a kinescope. Then
kinescope.
Kinescope. Yeah. Thank
yes.
you. They did a kinescope.
Yes,
could
sir.
Then relay to the West Coast for later airing, but they didn't film these. Lucy was really the first one to really film television and able to sell it, and that was the genius of what they did.
And she was, and because Desi, as I told you, I also knew the writers who wrote the I Love Lucy show, Bob Carroll Jr. and Madeline Pugh Davis, they both told me that Desi had the first, and that's why he liked to pronounce it, not Desi, but Desi, used to... he was very creative and inventive, and he's the first one who used three cameras to shoot a show. And for obvious reasons, you can shoot the wide shot, then you can shoot a close-up of one on one side and a close-up of another on the other side. And it made the show flow a little better. But indeed, you know.
There's just so much TV from those early days that never survived just because of the way it was broadcast all live. It was live play productions that had a camera on it.
I know.
And then were now.
I did a couple of them.
Are there some Mr. Peepers episodes that you can see yourself in? Or
yes.
Are they floating around?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
And now where could someone find that if they wanted to look you up?
You click in Mr. Peepers on the search engine. Then it'll come up as to where they're available, where you can watch them.
And is there ones in particular you know that you're in that you can play?
Well, the spider crab one is the most important one.
Okay, well people want to know that Mr. Peepers is out there.
Yeah, there were how many? There were 200 and some odd episodes.
Yeah, you know they didn't do just 22 episodes a year like they do now.
26.
They did a lot of.
They did 26, and so it became 52, and then Peepers was on for 3 years, almost 3 years, and it was About 100 and some odd episodes,
No, that's it's unfortunate we don't have more of that available to us. Thankfully.
Well, you know, thanks to you and TC Media Now, an unabashed plug, you have resurrected for the Twin Cities audience and now worldwide audiences, really thanks to the Internet, all of this that existed.
No, I'm surprised. I do get a lot of I do get some messages from people that live in other cities, because when you used to move, you didn't get to see what was going on or get to see these things ever again. And all these things on TC Media Now, those were never intended to be shown again. I mean, the news was done that day. There was reruns, but we rerun the news on TC Media Now. Tom, I have a commercial I want to play. This is one of my favorite Barry commercials. This is one. Maybe he doesn't like it as well, but I'm
looking at Wally and Pat Benoit right now.
Oh, we're gonna look at that too. Let's get some audio here.
Hi, I'm Barry Zivan. In just a minute, we'll be playing Cash In on 11. The cash amount for this call is $111, and the word to remember is Atlantic. Atlantic for $111. Stay tuned. We may be calling you.
And we're going to come back and see if someone got the word.
I hated that.
Was it just kind of gimmicky to you? Or?
Well, no. They were throwing me a bone. And sure. I didn't like that.
Okay,
what can I do? But I was being paid, so
we gotta find out if they got the word here. Okay, here we go.
Okay, I have Mrs. Alderman on the line from St. Paul. Do you know the clue and the amount, Mrs. Alderman?
It's Atlantic, and it's $111.
Fantastic! Congratulations, you just cashed in.
Oh, you don't know how happy I am. My sister's dying, and we needed money for a trip.
I'm very sorry. Well, but we're happy that you won. Please stay on the line. We'll verify your address. We make
two cash in on 11 calls a day, Monday through Friday. You could win $11,000 if you know the clue and the amount when I call. Keep watching TV 11, and you could be our next winner. And I hope you are, just as Mrs. Alderman just was.
You know, I was mad though because you never called me. I was already with my word. You never called me. I could have won.
He's deeply upset about this.
I don't know. Close to him now. He's going to hit me with his with his pencil.
Yeah, but I still have the lips comment, so I'm staying away from you today.
Did you have like a moment of panic when that kind of call comes through and you're like, oh, good, my sister is dead and like I'm
well, you have to
sorry.
You have to mentally readjust very rapidly.
Yeah.
I mean, this is an upbeat little bit and all of a sudden my sister's dying or dead and it's, oh, well, I'm really sorry. And you immediately revert to...
With a big smile.
Whoops. No. Oh, no, no. No, I never smiled when I talk about death. You know, except if it's somebody I hate, yes.
Well. Good, yeah.
But that's fine.
At least she won. So, Barry, you did well there. She won. And someone was watching Cash in 11, even though you didn't like it. I thought it was kind of fun because I was waiting every day at 6:15 for my call.
Really?
I guess I'm still waiting.
Holy moly.
Do you got some audio there from Mr. Peepers?
I am still looking up. I have some excerpts from Mr. Peepers.
Okay.
Should I play those or find – I'm going to try and find that Spider Crab one. I'm really excited.
Let's wait for Spider Crab. But, Barry, let's talk a little
good
bit more
luck
about
in 152 episodes. I think you may have a problem. But
I think it's so fascinating. You go from the theater of Pittsburgh to New York to Vegas to Minneapolis and Washington D.C. and back to Minneapolis, and here you are. We kept you somehow. You didn't leave us again. You're stuck with us now.
Oh, I'm happy. The only thing I want to be is back on the air, of course. Mm-hmm. So thanks to you, I get to do that. Chet Hundley once said that he said he wanted to die in front of a microphone or back of a microphone. You know, and Chet really didn't. I mean, God bless him. He passed away after he retired, quote unquote. But I mean, there's something about this. I mean, it's either born into your blood or whatever. But you know,
well, it's what you do. I mean, everyone finds at some point, even if it's not what they plan on doing, it's what they do. And when they're not doing it anymore, well, now what?
Yeah.
Do I know?
Well, you know me very well, and you know that in my fantasy life, I have a microphone on top of my bed. No, I really don't. But
it's kind of like, you know, Donahue. He can't really talk without the microphone in his hand. That was a bit that I saw one time where he couldn't speak to someone in a conversation without the microphone in his hand.
It's quite a business.
But it's amazing that the business has changed so much. And look at now that we were talking this week. You know, the big salaries and the big contracts, you know, that's fading away because it's so flat now. Everyone is a broadcaster now. When, you know, if you think about this, the kind of picture and film people can take now on their cameras or on their phones, and you look at the big stage productions you did when you were in TV, in, you know, the early days with Mr. Peepers or even in TV News, in the big bulky cameras we, you know, people were breaking their backs carrying around. You can take now a small camera that a 12-year-old can buy at, you know, the store, and they can take beautiful picture, and it really make some ripples in the business.
Well, it's watered it down, unfortunately. In those days, I mean, it was a very special business. It was very particular. It was almost elitist because you had to get into it, and it was such a closed shop. But now everybody, as you say, is on television. Everybody's on radio, blah, blah. But it's watered down, in my opinion, because the special ones, the special people, aren't special anymore much. Everybody wants to be a star in 10 seconds. And you think of these giant talents who were, and they really were. I mean, they were very focused. It wasn't sloppy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I mean, those of us who were blessed enough to be in the business almost since it began, I always joke that I started in the business 17 years after the business started on radio. KDK in Pittsburgh, the world's first radio station. And then for television, I was on 2 years before the whole nation got it, because New York City had 600 television sets. And the station on which I was, or the program on which I was, King's Party Line, was the first regularly scheduled television show with John Reed King. And the announcer was Bill Cullen from Pittsburgh, one of my Pittsburgh compatriots. And Bill, of course, later became a huge game show host and panel member. But they were special, and they really had it. They had the brain power. Steve Allen, who I was blessed to have friendship with, Steve one time said to me, although it was kind of odd for him to say this, this was 3 months before he died, and we were just talking, reminiscing about just about the business. And he said, and I said, you know, the shows I miss are now, thanks to MeTV and Antenna TV, they're on, but Where Father Knows Best and things like that. He said, Barry, he said, those programs were written for morons. I said, Steve, how can you say this? Of course, his was a variety show and not a sitcom. Mm-hmm. But he said those sitcoms were written for morons. And when I watch them today,
it's comforting.
First of all, it's quality, in my opinion. There's always a nice message, even in the Brady Bunch or in any of those TV shows. There was always a good little message in there for the kids or for the adults or whatever.
Do you have cable?
Oh yeah.
I look at cable and I look at 300 channels of what, it's 300 channels of nothing.
Yeah.
And there, you know,
the only good stuff is the old stuff.
Well, and that's
there's only one TV show I know of that has a message at the end of each episode anymore.
Jerry Springer.
Modern Family.
Really?
Modern Family. See, at the end, they kind of wrap up the entire episode with a little message to, you know, inspire you and try and make you better.
Very interesting.
But that is it.
Not Jerry's final thought?
You know, I try to live my life according to Jerry's final thought.
That's the only part of the show I like, is the final thought. I can't watch the show. It's funny because I've had some time at home, and I'm like, okay, now it's tough for me to not be doing stuff. So now I'm trying to take some time, you know, to relax here lately. So I'm at the TV with the remote. Okay, now I used to do this. You know, I used to be 10 channels. Then even when I had cable, it was about 50 channels. Okay, now there's about 300 channels.
That's right.
And I'm like, so what is on now? What are people watching now? And I watch it for about 5 minutes, and there's a commercial for about 10 minutes. So I move on, then I watch something else for about 30 seconds on the commercial, and then I'm bored with the next three things that are on there. So I switched to MeTV, which these old programs, which were reran over and over again, but now the film print is so beautiful now. They've remastered these and redigitized these. Even a show like Gilligan's Island, which I won't really watch. I'm sorry. I won't go the quality on that one. I'll give to go. Steve Allen on that one.
yes,
mark. But
definitely.
But I can't believe how beautiful the picture looks in these old '60s sitcoms that were filmed on film and used to be really grainy. You used to watch MASH after the news. After you were off the news and MASH would be on, and it looked like a 40-year-old program that was so grainy and scratchy. But now these programs are crisp and beautiful.
Yeah, one of our writers for Peepers was a writer for MASH, Everett Greenbaum, and he passed away just recently. But it freaked me out because when I saw the credits for MASH, I thought, oh my God, he was one of our writers. So it's just, oh boy.
Let's take a break. We'll come back. Let's see if we can find some Peepers audio, and then we'll talk about what Barry's been up to and what's next. So we'll be back on Flashback Twin Cities here on KLBB Club 1220.
New York City, New York City.
Have you ever been there?
No, no, but I have friends there. Actually, a friend.
I see.
But she has friends. And she always said to me, my friends are your friends. So I have friends in New York City.
It's not like a friendly place.
Oh, it is, if you have friends. Well, then, why don't you call her up while you're there? You see, she loves to hear you.
Why, I'd be happy to. What is her name?
Never mind the name. Just say you're a friend of Mrs. Gurney's.
Well, yes, but just to be sure, give me her name and phone number.
Henrietta Moore. And the telephone, Henrietta 3. Henrietta Moore. Just say you're a friend of Mrs. Gurney's.
I'll look it up in the phone book.
Oh, dear. Oh, bless you. And I do hope you have a nice trip. And don't forget Henrietta Moore.
Right.
Oh, and if she isn't home, then you tell some of her friends to tell her hello from me.
Mrs. Gurney.
Jefferson City 347.
This is very tough to watch because, I mean, having been with them so many times and all day long and through the night, et cetera, et cetera. Marion, pardon me, during one of the rehearsal breaks, told me, I just said, how did you get over here, Marion? She was British. And she said her husband... that she came over just after England had been bombed by the Nazis in 1940, I believe. And she said, we just felt that America would be the safest place to be. And so her husband was an accountant, and she was an actress, of course. And she said, we just decided to leave. And that's how I got over here. She said, we wanted to get back. And it's really funny because Maureen O'Hara told me the same kind of story that Charles Lawton brought her over to do The Hunchback of Notre Dame. And all of a sudden, England had been attacked, and they couldn't get back safely. So that's why she stayed in the States. But but with Marion, she was the sweetest person. And the other actress who was on there was a lady named Rita Shaw, and Rita played one of the women in Picnic with Rosalind Russell and my friend Susie Strasberg, and then an actor named Gage Clark, who I just saw on a rerun of something, and these people were of such quality. They were just phenomenal. And then Tony named one of his children Jefferson, out of Jefferson Junior High, of course, and the other one is Julia, but it was just incredible. There was one other thing. Oh, yeah, the announcer for Mr. Peepers was a guy named Rex Marshall, and our sponsor was Reynolds Aluminum, Reynolds Wrap, Reynolds Metals, but we never met Rex. Rex was in the RCA building, which is now the GE building, and doing the announcing there, and we, of course, were in the next building, the RKO building. So anyway, now we fast forward, really fast forward, to 1980-something. And I had just done a film for a group in Quebec. And we were on tour to promote it, and it turned out to be one of the towns was Hanover, New Hampshire, the Hanover Inn at Dartmouth. And who did a radio show there? Rex Marshall. So I got to be a guest on Rex's show, and he introduced me as, you know, one of the kids who'd been on Peepers, and it was such a joy to finally meet him. He was such a class act anyway.
That's great.
Yeah. So
our guest today, Barry Zavan, talking about the glory days of the classic days of New York City and TV, when everything was new and exciting, and before we were making TV in our backyards and putting on cable, right? I got a couple of commercials. You might like these better than the ones I played before. I like Cash in 11, but we got a couple better ones here. I'm going to play this here, Tom.
All right.
And wait for it. It'll come.
Barry Zevan, the weatherman, is alive and well. Well, let's just say he's alive and leave it at that.
Gregory Peck.
Yes.
Okay, one more here.
I wrote that for him.
That's why he delivered it so well.
Camper City, the RV capital of the world, presents People on the Go, featuring Barry Zivan, the sporting man. Here's the perfect unit for family vacationers. Lots of room, plenty of comfort, every size or floor plan that's made. Camper City's got them. Fifth wheelers, too. The travel trailer. It'll bring out the sport in you. So when you've got the urge to get up and go, go in an RV, any RV. Over 200 in stock now at Camper City, Highway 65 in Blaine.
Your daughter sent me a message not too long ago when I posted this. And she said, you know, everyone should be so lucky to have their dad in swim trunks and goggles on TV over and over again. And I said, well, I'm sure you felt lucky for that, too.
Yes. Yeah, Shonda kind of hides her head, I think, once in a while. It's wonderful. I mean, God bless you. You made it all come alive.
Well,
again.
If you've not seen Barry in a while, first of all, you aren't looking very hard because on StarTribune.com, Community Voices, Barry does a little blog column called Senior Moment, and he has a lot of good insight from his many years of working in entertainment and broadcasting. He has great stories of things that are going on in the news, so make sure you check that out.
And, Thank you, sir.
He likes to hear your positive comments. And also go to tcmedianow.com, and we have a lot of Barry Zivan on here. I have an interview I did with him a few years ago, which he'll tell you all about his life and everything he has done and wants to do. And also the video, which I just played this audio from, is called The Many Faces of Barry Zivan. This was it was already your retrospective of 1979. I mean, this was just halfway through what we're doing here. And lots of great commercials and Gregory Peck, and you can see John Denver and Jimmy Osmond and Walter Mondale. A lot of people that Barry has been with, and you can see him talking to them. It's a great video.
The one with Peck, thank you, Tom. The one with Peck, he also did a second one, where I had written, Barry Zivan, the weatherman, is alive and well, and let's just say he's alive and leave it at that. And then Peck said, I want to do that again, so he did a second one, and I think it's on there, might be on there. It says, Barry Zivan, the weatherman, is alive and well, let's just say he's well and leave it at that. And he laughed, and he winked at me because, you know, hey, see what I did. Yeah, I had been with him the first time out in the desert west of Las Vegas at the Krupp Ranch. He was doing a film called The Stalking Moon with Eva Marie Saint, and she and I had a lot of fun on that day, too, with a giant turtle she was running away from. But anyway, Peck said, let's go into the bulrushes. Gregory Peck, let's go into the bulrushes. Yeah. So he was just so great. And it was really interesting to read. I love to sometimes when I'm thinking about the old days, et cetera, I'll look up a name. And it's funny because Peck, during one of his bios, said even though his father was a doctor of some magnitude in La Jolla, California, so he wasn't poor. But when he went to New York, he wanted to do it all on his own. And he said for 1 or 2 weeks, he couldn't afford to pay the rent, and he would sleep on park benches in Central Park just to survive. And it wasn't like he was too proud to ask for help. He just didn't want to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of guy he was. I mean, class act.
Here's one. Here's a Bob Goulet. This is a good one, too.
Oh, good.
Nice. Very nice. We got 76 degrees here with partly cloudy weather. And all cloudy. The sunny will be, forgive me, that's sunny. That the looking with the... Yeah. Hi, Bob.
Aren't you...
Jack Jones, yes.
That's what I thought.
76 and 84 down here, you're right. But 106 in Green Bay, which is rather intriguing.
No, that's a lot.
That's
you
a,
made
sure,
that up.
It was in somebody's basement. Yeah. 69 over here and cloudy. That's why it was 69.
I see. Thank you.
Anything else you'd like?
Welcome.
Thank you.
Not only to Detroit, but to our newscast.
Okay. And, I'm playing golf tomorrow. Is it going to be nice tomorrow?
Fabulous day tomorrow.
Okay.
Superb.
What am I going to shoot? 69? 106.
That's what I shoot, 190. It is a thrill to see you really going great guns, as always.
Thank you. I cut my hair tonight. You like it?
Yes, he did. He cut
I
his
really
own
did.
Hair.
I was so angry. I just... What do you mean you saw that? No. Then we'd get a pair of scissors and they wouldn't work. No, at home I had my own scissors. I'm so mad. It was sticking out like that. And I cut it. I don't know what it looks like. Hey, gang, we'll take a look.
Fantastic. To the audience who is wondering, maybe, we do this occasionally. and you come on the weather show and help me out because I need it.
You need all the help you can get.
You're right.
Yeah. Wearing a Bob, green tie. You think it's St. Patrick's Day, for goodness sakes, you little leprechaun?
Well, what can I say? At any rate, Bobby, you are great, and we are grateful, and you're at the Birmingham Theater with Bob Melvin and the whole gang.
Yes, and I hope to be back sometime in the fall or next year.
Fantastic.
Either in Camelot or Kiss Me, Kate, with my wife, Carol, and you better be there.
We will. Thank you.
There we go.
Goosebumps.
That's fun.
Cow, he's a fast talker. How do you keep up with that?
Oh, he was wonderful. He started this parade of these megastars coming on my weather show in Las Vegas, and then we continued that everywhere I lit after that. And in fact, it was Carol Lawrence, his wife then, in Las Vegas, who had urged him to call me up and get on the show because he wanted to have some fun. They used to watch me all the time. So she said, Bobby's coming down, and so forth. And that was the beginning. Ironically, my friend David Winters, who was in West Side Story, Carol played the original lead in West Side Story on Broadway. We never got to talk about that because David Winters was one of the Jets or the Shark, whatever they were. And but she was so nice to me, and she was very complimentary. And he came on the show a lot, and it was just fun.
So what's going on these days? You have the Star Tribune. You're doing some writing for Star Tribune. What else do you have going on? Last time you were here, we were discussing Poland.
I think Poland is going to be happening very soon.
Very good.
Thank goodness. And I just finished a documentary to keep the bread on the table.
Bread's good.
Back in December, and bread, anything, scraps, out in North Dakota for one of the Indian tribes who actually own most of the land where the Bakken oil fields are. And
really?
Thank goodness.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it was, and Sam Donaldson, again, was my host narrator, and we taped Sam in D.C., but this particular tribe, they also, their lands are on the Badlands. And the chief said to me, he said, the Badlands turned out to be the good lands. And so,
who would have thought, really? I mean, 5-10 years ago, who would have thought that this is what North Dakota was going to become?
Yeah, well, it's the richest state in the country. I mean, it really, really is. And people in just regular jobs. I mean, a friend of mine said one of his pals was became a Tom Thumb store manager for $110,000 a year.
Wow.
So yeah, and what? All the salaries are in six mm-hmm. figures, and. It's incredible because even the motel prices, I mean, thank goodness they picked up my motel, but in towns like Dickinson and Minot, et cetera, even the smaller towns, it's $125, $150 a night for a Super 8. And it's, hello? Wait a minute.
Yeah, but you do get that Connell breakfast, though. So I mean, you got to keep that
and
in mind.
And the mint on your pillow,
that's
Mike.
That's right.
Yeah, I swear, I think I remember hearing from a couple of our financial folks that just even a small little starter house is like over $500,000, $600,000 out there.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. And truthfully, the highway in Newtown, North Dakota, which is the headquarters for this particular tribe, they're the Mandan Hidatsa Arikara MHA Nation, you can't get across the street.
And you've
had it's all these trucks, not only with hauling the oil and all this kind of stuff, but also prefab houses. They can't build houses fast enough out there.
When will this documentary be available for us to watch?
Probably in a couple of months, because they are making some changes. There were some different things that mm-hmm. happened. It's just a kind of a mini doc. It's a 25-minute mini doc.
Well, maybe we'll have to have you come back in and give us another preview before it airs, so we can make sure that the audience here at Flashback Twin Cities checks it out and knows what you're working on.
Thank you, sir.
Because they'll be also on StarTribune.com. It's Community Voices. Barry Zavan, Senior Moment, is on there every week, so go check that out. And I encourage you to give constructive, positive comments if you like it, and tell your friends and pass it along. There's some good stuff there.
Constructive is the good word here.
So constructive, yeah. We don't need to be cruel on the internet.
And yeah, don't be mean to me.
Don't be mean to Barry.
Yeah.
And then go to TCMedia.
Punch you in the mouth, yeah.
Yeah, look at this. Nice. He's going this way on us. TCMedianow.com. Barry's on there, too. Hey, Barry, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
We will
Thank
be back
you.
Next Saturday. We got a big show next Saturday, but with some surprise guests. Jim Dubois being one of them, Chairman of the Minnesota Broadcast Association. This is Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB Club 1220. We'll be back next week. Everyone have a great week.